There was a commercial on the radio a while back by a local auto dealership, which was trying to drum up some business for its service department. You may have heard it. The service manager says that he figures the world is divided into two types of car owners. Those who bring in their car for regular servicing, changing the oil, refilling the tires, inspecting the brakes, checking the fluids, etc. And then there are those whose vehicle only comes in on the back of a tow truck. He is, he says, happy to see them either way. But those who come in for regular servicing end up paying less and having their cars last a lot longer. Well, it may be that this commercial was on my mind when I turned to look at the text for this sermon as I was trying to see what it had to say to me this week and what I, in turn, might have to say to you. Now, you need to know that I love this psalm probably as much as anyone here. It features prominently in my first memory of church, of hearing it at the children's chapel service way back when I was in kindergarten or first grade or so with kindly Mr. Hoofnagel of St. Thomas's Episcopal Church presiding. And over the years, differing aspects of the psalm have jumped out at me as having special meaning at different times. In times of trial, for instance, that part about walking through the valley of the shadow of death was always comforting. In times of uncertainty and doubt, that part about having a feast prepared for me, and my head being anointed with oil. In times of feeling just overwhelmed, that part about being led to lie down in green pastures. All those wonderful images of God's protection and care. But this past week, what jumped off the page at me, what grabbed me was the line, "He restoreth my soul." I think part of the reason this grabbed me was that it occurred to me how out of fashion it is to even think about our souls, never mind thinking about how they might be restored. What I am not talking about here is restoring just the body. We know about the need to restore our bodies, about how the stress of daily living can literally bend us out of shape, how the additional strain of caring for someone who is ill can physically wear us out, how the tension which comes with unemployment and underemployment will over time take its toll on our physical health. Over the past few decades, many of us have paid a lot more attention to the task of restoring our bodies by, for instance, working out at the gym or taking regular walks, eating better, practicing yoga, receiving massage therapy, and so on. And what I'm not talking here is about restoring the mind. I'm not talking about intelligence, about education, about learning, about how we might cram more information into our craniums already overstimulated, overwhelmed brains. What I am talking about here, what the psalmist is talking about, is the soul. That part of us which is really not just a part of us, but which is us at the deepest level. That which encompasses all of who we are, conscious and unconscious, mind and body and spirit. The all of us. Including, of course, that part of us which yearns for transcendence, for communion with the one who created and creates us, the source of all love and meaning and truth. In other words, when we talk about the soul, we're not talking about a part of us, we're talking about the all of us. And so to bring it back to where we started, I think that in some very real ways, the church is to battered souls what that auto dealership service department is to the vehicles that they sell. I think many of us come here because we know that our souls are battered and bruised, depleted and run down, and we know that we need at least a regular tune-up, if not a complete overhaul. So week in and week out, we come in for the regular service. Now, others of us, of course, may have neglected that regular servicing for one reason or another, and metaphorically come here on the back of a tow truck. We come here because we have neglected the nourishment and care of our souls, and yet have somehow sensed that this might be the last stop, the way station of last resort, the one place where that healing which you may all have given up on might be found. I can't help but think of Arthur Growing as I talk about that, and remember how Arthur would tell of how one day he had reached that point where he had tried everything and struggled with everything, and it was a very rough time in so many ways, and one morning woke up and said, "We're going to church," and walked through that door, and it just changed everything for him. Well, sometimes, more than just coming here for that regular maintenance, or more than coming here just because of the thought that this might be the place of last spiritual resort, we come here because we have the idea that it is here that we will learn how we can restore our soul. That if we can quiet our minds enough, if we can manage our busy schedules enough to get here, if we can make it to Bible study or an adult education class, or make it off on a retreat or a mission trip, then somehow we might manage to restore our soul. Joan Chichester recounts an ancient story about the spiritual life. A young monastic came upon an elder one day sitting among a group of praying, working, meditating people. "I have the capacity to walk on water," the young disciple said. "So let's you and I go out onto that small lake over there and sit down and carry on a spiritual discussion." But the teacher answered, "If what you are trying to do is to get away from all these people, why do you not come with me and fly into the air and drift along in the quiet open sky and talk up there?" And the young seeker replied, "I can't do that because the power you mentioned is not one that I possess." And the teacher exclaimed, "Just so. Your power of remaining still on the top of the water is one that is possessed by fish. And my capacity for floating through the air can be done by any fly. These abilities have nothing to do with the real truth, and in fact may simply become the basis of arrogance and competition, not spirituality. If we're going to talk about spiritual things, we should really be talking right here." The internet, bookstores, the entire world is full of those who will offer one fad after another, which all promise that if you would just sign on and follow their program, they will have all the answers to the struggles of life. And the church can be no exception, telling us that the path towards spiritual wellness lies through meditation or mastering a particular prayer practice or attendance at specialized retreats or some sort of Lenten study program. And more often than not, that just as fad diets often fail to deliver on their extravagant promises, these spiritual fads fail to deliver what people are looking for if they're looking for a new perspective, new meaning, new hope. As the ancient story reminds us, Our souls will not be restored out there somewhere. And not through our efforts alone. Restoration of our souls is not something that we do. It's something that is done for us. And it is done where we are. The psalmist tells us not, I restoreth my soul, but he restoreth my soul. Maybe this is one of the greatest arguments for infant baptism. Consider what happens when an infant is baptized. A little baby, far too young to have any intention about it, far too unformed to even have a conception of wanting to be ushered into a new community and a new life, is washed, cleaned, and refreshed, and renewed, and empowered through the waters of baptism. What a model that baby is for us. What a teacher for all of us who yearn to have our souls restored. Just as that baby did nothing to restore their soul, so too we need to do nothing to have our soul restored. This is grace. This is a free, unmerited gift that the Good Shepherd offers to each and every one of us. He restoreth my soul. He restoreth my soul, and so might end a worthy but insufficient sermon on the 23rd Psalm. You see, the soul is not restored as an end in itself, so that one might lean back in the recliner, put one's feet up, and with a comfortable sigh, settle in for the duration. No, life is a journey, not a destination, and the restored soul is expected to renew the pilgrimage. There are paths of righteousness, roads of right living to be walked. There are valleys of danger to be negotiated, for peace and justice and abundance for all will not come in on their own and unopposed. There is a table at the last to be looked forward to. And there is that final safe harbor at the end of the day where one might dwell in the house of the Lord all this life long and forever. To a rundown, depleted, unnourished soul, that journey might seem at best terribly daunting. But to a restored soul, a soul refreshed and renewed and empowered, that is an invitation to a journey of a life truly worth living. So friends, here on this second Sunday in the season of Lent, this is the takeaway. This is the good news for each and every one of us. He restoreth our souls and causes us to lie down in pastures green. Amen.